Have a good show.
Blog Talk Radio.
All right, thank you.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that describes them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born, for they are the ones that you must teach. And you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, but they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
Listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society, and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening. 6 o'clock, Warriors Way Radio, continuing the fight.
Hotel family, this is your brother, Kwasi, T.J. Kwatu Kraft. I'm thankful that I'm here again, and everything's been going pretty good. Went and had a doctor's checkup today. I'm doing well. Don't have to go for another year to get checked out. So with all this going on, I hope everybody finds themselves in good health and good spirits. So tonight's topic is what does your self-defense look like? And I say that because of the Kyle Rittenhouse situation. You know, here's a young man, 17 years old at the time, back in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and they justified saying that he was, felt that he was in danger. People were coming at him, and he was justified in using deadly force. He had an AR-15. And so we'll talk a little more about that. There's also what we just had, and my condolences for the families involved in the Rittenhouse situation as well. But we had a recent incident just a couple of days ago where a young man, a 15-year-old kid, brought a gun to school, and that was in Michigan. And he killed, I think, four people. And I believe a police officer was shot. And so that's another situation that they're looking at. And they're looking at also maybe charging the parents in regard to that. But, again, this kid, he was red flagged during that time, the day of the shooting. His parents were at the school because there was a conference with him in regards to behavioral issues. So they did notice he had some issues, but again, there was a gun involved in that situation. His father had just recently purchased a gun that he used maybe 4 days ago. So that's what you had in that incident. We're going to talk about some other people and some other situations where a gun was not used in self-defense. And one of the reasons we say that, and I want to put that out there, that so many people, they're thinking self-defense, you know, you need to have a personal weapon. And we always say the hand is an extension of that weapon, you know. So, but we'll go more into details with that. I did contact a friend of mine, a former instructor, martial artist, used to teach with us. He's now in Arizona. So he may come on tonight. Sensei Terrence Thompson. So we'll see if he shows up tonight and chimes in. But I'm going to do an ancestral profile. And my ancestral profile is going to be on Sonny Charles Liston. Now, Sonny Charles Liston, he was born in Arkansas. They say 1932. Some dates may be a little different, and one of the reasons why you have these different dates because Arkansas did not go to using the census as far as getting certified birth certificates until 1965. And so you have different states that came on in different eras in regards to when they started using certain documentation for birth and things of that nature. But I'm going to tell you about Sonny Liston. Now, Sonny Liston, he was a former boxing champion. He had a record of 54 fights, 50 wins, 4 losses, 39 knockouts, and 4 defeats. Now, one of the things that about Sonny Liston, his father, and they talk about his history, and I've seen many of documentaries and read some books, and his father was very abusive, beat him on a regular basis. And when Sonny Liston was 9 years old, I think they had a mule, and the mule died. And so Sonny Liston's father, Todd, told him that now you're going to be the mule. So, and Sonny Liston had marks on his back and everything because he was being whipped, you know, like kind of how they would do an animal. And that's what his father did to him as he plowed the field. So, but Sonny Liston ran away from home at 13, just got tired of being abused, the abuse that he was getting from his father. And so he ended up going to St. Louis. And while he was in St. Louis, you know, he got in school, stayed with some other people. And during that time when he was going to school, he was being teased a lot because he wasn't a smart kid. He had trouble picking up things. And he was, like I said, he was being kind of bullied. And he got tired of being laughed at, so he left school. So he's a bigger kid at 13 years old, and he got into crime. He started robbing people and stealing things, which led to him getting in trouble with the police. And when he was arrested, and he ended up serving time for robbery, and he got like a 5-year sentence. So he's at the Missouri State Prison. And while there, he meets up this preacher that happens to be head of the fitness program for the prisoners there. And during that time, Liston was kind of happy, I won't say really happy about being in prison, but one of the things that, you know, he was quoted as saying that at least I get 3 meals a day, because at home that wasn't the case because they were extremely poor. So he gets 3 meals a day, and one day he had got into it with a few people. He saw someone picking on someone while he was in prison. And he told these white guys to leave this one black guy alone. And the guards and the other, the preacher that was there, and his name was Stevens, said, "You all four of you guys are going to go in the hole, and you can settle it there." And so that was an area where it was a small enough area, but, you know, when people got in trouble, they sit in there by themselves, and if they had to hash it out with somebody. But Sonny Liston had a problem with three other guys, white supremacist guys, that were picking on one of the inmates, one of the black inmates. So long and short of it, they threw them in the hole. Sonny Liston walked out. All three of them are beat up. And from that point on, everybody had a lot of fear for Liston. The preacher at that time, the minister, Stevens, saw that Liston, you know, had some potential. So he said, "Let's have him do some boxing." And so he got Sonny Liston to start doing some boxing, and he just dominated everybody in prison, just beat the crap out of him. And sometimes he made it look so easy because he was so massively strong that they would put two to three people in the ring with him just so that he would get a decent workout. And because the preacher that was trained Sonny Liston in prison, he had a connection with the mob. And so what they did was they decided to let Sonny Liston out early. So he got out in, I believe, 2 years of the 5-year sentence. So everything else was just, he was on parole. And so once he was out of prison, he started boxing. And he also did some amateur boxing for about a year, won some championships in Chicago, a Golden Gloves championship. He also fought a former Olympic champion, heavyweight champion, and beat him as well. Now, we know about the Sonny Liston Ali fight. I'm going to talk a little about that, especially the second fight. But in the Sonny Liston, you just got to understand some of the things about him. When he got out and he started fighting, learned how to fight, he was also had a relationship with the mob because his trainer, his manager, was connected with the mob. And so when Sonny Liston wasn't fighting, he was a henchman for the mob. So he was, you know, when people were making bets and they weren't paying, Sonny Liston was there to enforce. Or if people were crossing the picket line, Sonny Liston was there. And so they used him that way. And so Sonny Liston would get money from the mob, and he did not like the police. And so at one time, Sonny Liston, and there's two different occasions, he got into a fight with a police officer. One of his friends had dropped him off to go to the gym to work out, and the cop ran up to him and told him that he had to move that car, and Sonny Liston was saying he'd be right back, and, you know, why don't you leave us alone? And the cop reached for his club to hit Liston, and Liston then beat up the cop and knocked him down. The cop ended up getting his leg broke during the confrontation, and then Liston got back in the car, and he took off and left. There was another incident where a cop saw Liston, and Liston was always stopped. Sonny Liston was always stopped by the cop at different times, and because they had it in for him for what he did to another police officer. And this cop was talking smack to Liston, and when he went for his gun, Liston knocked him out, picked him up, and threw him in the trash can. And when he threw him in the trash can, he walked back wearing the cop's hat. So, you know, when they talk about Sonny Liston and the things that he did, and you're talking about during an era where police were so dominant and how they treated the black and brown people, and today we would say, you know, a lot of that hasn't changed. But Sonny Liston, he did not like the police, but he had backup from the mob. But they did tell Sonny Liston he needs to leave town, or something was going to happen to him. And at that point, he left St. Louis. Now, when he left St. Louis, and he continued fighting, and he amassed a record of, I believe, 22 wins. And he could hit so hard. And he talked about his sparring. You know, he had 15-inch hands. You know, that's how wide his hands were, how big his hands were. And he could hit you in sparring. And he's done that. And, you know, they have literature on this where he ripped a guy's his stitches right out of his headgear and knocked out 7 teeth. Another guy knocked out 16 teeth. And all of that was with a jab. And they talked about how powerful his jab was and so forth. But so if we go on, Sonny Liston was not liked by the public. You had somebody like when Sonny Liston was his first attempt to fight for the heavyweight championship, he fought Floyd Patterson. Now, everybody wanted Floyd Patterson to win. Even Robert F. Kennedy, the president during that time, came up to Floyd Patterson and wishing him good luck. And you're the champion we want because, you know, he was a nice guy. He wasn't a troubled person. Sonny Liston had a troubled past. So no way they wanted him to be champion. So long and short of it, he fights Floyd Patterson. Sonny Liston knocks him out inside of 2 minutes. I mean, 2 minutes and something seconds, knocks him out in the first round. Sonny Liston comes home, and, you know, champions, they come home. And as they come home, they're met with a big parade from the city, just welcoming them back. And when he got off the plane, there was nobody there. So that hurt him deeply. He fought Floyd Patterson the second time, knocked him out again in 2 minutes. And so he continued fighting and winning, and then eventually he fought Muhammad Ali. And when he fought Muhammad Ali in that first fight, they talk about Sonny Liston might have had a shoulder injury. Ali was just too much for him. Some of his trainers indicated that he had been drinking the night before. He didn't train like he should have trained. And so those kind of things were said about Sonny Liston quite a bit. But he fought Ali the second time, and they talk about the phantom punch. He was punched with a right hand, went down, and never got back up. Now, some of the things when we talk about his mysterious death, Sonny Liston, he was found dead in his apartment. He was 38 years old, and they had said that it was a cocaine overdose, a heroin overdose. And they had a needle stuck in his arm. There was a picture of a needle stuck in his arm when the police entered, saw the body, when they took the body away. But long and short of it, and they also indicated that the police knew because his wife came home, Geraldine, and saw his body. And she had went on a vacation for about 5 days, and when she returned, she saw his body. And they said the police knew about it, but they just let his body sit there in the apartment, knowing that he was dead. So his body had decayed, and it was a bad smell in there. And so there was a lot of theory about why Sonny Liston died. Now, Sonny Liston, he couldn't get a lot of jobs other than being the muscle for the mob. And when he was the muscle for the mob, and after losing the fight, to Muhammad Ali, he did have some comebacks. He lost a couple fights, and then he fought Chuck Wepner and beat him. And they're saying in that fight, when he fought Chuck Wepner, he was supposed to take a dive, and Sonny Liston didn't take a dive. That was his last fight. So there's rumors about his death. They're saying that also, and Sonny Liston threatened to tell the mob to go to the papers and go public and tell that the mob asked him to take a dive in his second fight with Muhammad Ali. So that was another theory that they kind of threw out there about Sonny Liston and his death. Because, again, he was afraid of needles, and you see him dead with a needle stuck in his arm. The other thought behind that was that he was owed the – he was asking the mob for more money. for doing the work that he was doing for them, and they didn't want to give it to him. And so they got him drunk, and they took him back to his apartment, beat him up, and then they drugged him and gave him the heroin, which he died from. And so, like I said, there's a number of different stories. None of them have really been determined this is what really happened and why he really died. But, again, he died at the age of 38. He was one of the hardest punchers in boxing, period. He used to be a former sparring partner for George Foreman. And George Foreman speaks about Sonny Liston, and so does Ali, and they just talk about Ali said Sonny Liston had the best jab in boxing, and had all the skills necessary. So did George Foreman, and George Foreman also indicated that when he sparred with Sonny Liston, you know, he just made sure he never got a man, so that Sonny Liston remembered that they're friends. And he was called the Intimidator, Sonny Liston, because of the stare that he would give people. And George Foreman, when you see him fight, that was one thing that he picked up from Sonny Liston, and also that devastating jab. But he's ranked number two as far as one of the hardest hitters in boxing. Emmanuel Stewart said he's a better puncher, hits harder than Mike Tyson, George Foreman, all of them together, you know. And so that's Sonny Liston. So, and I think I have, Terrence? Sensei Terrence, are you on the line?
I'm in. How are you?
All right. Today's topic, we're going to be talking about what does your self-defense look like. And I know you being a martial artist, you have some skills and some thoughts concerning some of the things that we're going to be talking about today. I'm going to talk about the Kyle Rittenhouse defense, and I'm going to, will that work for you? What does your self-defense look like? Do you have a gun? Do you have a knife? Are you an MMA fighter? You heard what the late James Brown, and I was corrected, thankfully, by Doc Rogers today. I said, I don't know karate, but I know Razor, you know.
Yeah.
And so that was James Brown and stuff. So when we look at those kind of things, you know, some people think, you know, and when we talk about Kyle Rittenhouse, and one of the and they had a gun expert come in, and they talked about what he did. Now, he had a gun, a long rifle, and the only time he had it pointed at 3 o'clock was when he was shooting. Outside of that, when he walked with the gun, he was carrying it at 6 o'clock or 12 o'clock. So it's either pointed down to the ground or is pointed up in the air. And even when he fell, you know, so the gun enthusiasts, the NRA, National Rifle Association, they had an expert come and talk in his defense to say that, you know, for a young man, he did everything right in regards to how he carried the gun, how he handled himself, and so forth. And so when you get into these situations, and if these people that believed they were fighting for their lives because they saw what they believed to be an active shooter, he had shot several times. You know, he hit three people, killing two of them. And so, you know, what do you do? What do you do? And if these people maybe had a skill set, maybe they would have been able to take the gun away from him, because one of the guys that was killed, he fell down and tried to get up, and as he got up, he got shot, and a couple other guys got shot. And I'm just going to make a few comments about some other incidents about people that, you know, because a lot of times people, when they talk to you about self-defense, they tell you that you need a gun. And so we got all these people that are gun-toting people, and they're ready to shoot somebody, but are they really ready to kill somebody? You know, is that what you really want to do? I mean, because that's a great – anytime you shoot a gun, you're using deadly force. And so people need to understand that. And when they put you in these classes and they tell you about the gun law, those are one of the things that they put an emphasis on. And I'm just going to – tell you about a few incidents where people didn't use guns, but they were able to defend themselves. There was, and you can look some of these incidents up on a YouTube where there was an 82-year-old female that someone had broke into her house. She went to the door. A guy had came to her door and asked her to said he was that he had been shot and that he needed help and if she could call the police. And so she left the door and went back into her kitchen. And her name is Willie Murphy. And she's a former bodybuilder. Actually, no, not former. Currently, she's 82 years old at that time, and she has over 500 first place trophies. She works out at the local YMCA, and she can deadlift like 225 pounds. Long and short of it, a young male had went to her door, was bending over, banging at her door, saying, "Could you call the police? I need help. I've been shot." And she said, "Okay, just wait right there." She left her door, went to the, and the door was closed, mind you. And she left her door, went to the phone, and called 911. And then all of a sudden she hears a crash. She kicks the door in. He kicks the door in, and he's in her house. He's in her kitchen. And she grabs the leg off of the table, and she starts hitting him with it. He falls down on the table. He hits the glass, and now she's jumping on top of him, jumping on top of him. And then at that point, he's trying to get up, and she hits him again with the stick, and she just keeps swinging. And, you know, she's very animated when she talked about what she did, how she defended herself. And then when the police finally showed up, you know, the guy was still on the ground, and this was a young man in his 20s. And they took him. They had an ambulance out there because they're figuring they're going to have an ambulance for her. They had to carry him to the ambulance and take him to the hospital before they took him to jail. So this is how she handled her problem. Now, you got to understand, she's a trained practitioner in weights and so forth, so she takes care of herself. So there's a whole bunch of things that goes into, you know, when we say what does your self-defense look like, because a lot of people, they sit and they talk about, I can do this and I can do that. And, you know, and we just had that other incident in Michigan where a young man kills several people, and whether he was being bullied at school or whatever, he got upset and he killed some people. And there was a red flag on this kid because the same day that this incident took place, his parents was there on behavioral issues talking to administration. And so, again, what does your self-defense look like? Do we want everybody to have a gun? Can we handle ourselves different ways? I mean, Sensei TJ, what are your thoughts?
You know what? First, let me say first of all, I tend to talk a lot, so if I'm talking too much, feel free to cut me off. But I talk a lot when I'm passionate about things, and I talk a lot when I'm passionate about the topics that we're on. And self-defense has always been my topic. You know, when it comes from bullying, and my actual background came from being bullied, and with my stature, you know, being 5'4", 155 pounds. You know, it can be really intimidating, you know, at times in middle school and high school and things like that. So that's what really got me into it. I didn't want the flashiness. You know, a lot of guys do self-defense, and it comes off as flashy, and it's like, oh, wow, it's more theatrical. And I would admit that I came off as theatrical, you know, when I'm putting on seminars or things like that, because, you know, you want to wow the crowd and get people into it. So I will admit that it came off as theatrical until Sensei told me. See, he put me to the side, and it was critical, but I needed it. He said, you know, that's theatrical. You need to work on practical, you know, what makes sense right now. You know, if someone comes in here, mm-hmm. or you're out with your wife, or you're out, you know, with your mother, your kids, what makes sense? You can't control what other people do, but you can control what you're able to do in any instance. When you ask me,
right.
you know, what my self-defense looks like, it has evolved into practical things, you know, things that can take a person down. You know, I had a sensei tell me that, you know, it was his thing. He said his thing. He was, sharp guy. I mean, he's almost 60. He's been doing martial arts since he was about 4. Sharp
right.
guy. And his thing is he will leave you with something to remember. Oh, he will remember.
Right.
I mean, that broken rib you have now, you might not feel it because that adrenaline is pumping. Oh, but you got problems coming later. And so I've learned over time
right.
to let me make sure my self-defense is practical. You know,
right.
how can I eliminate whatever the issue is? Whatever the issue is, how can I eliminate it? Now, when you ask, what do I think that we should have as far as self-defense, rather be a gun, rather be a knife, rather be mace, I tell you, since I have all. I have all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a knife. I do have a knife. I do have a gun. My wife has a gun. Registered, owned by us, is 100% legal. But I tell you, I explain it to my children. I tell them all the time. You know, you see these people on TV or on the, you know, on a YouTube or whatever it may be, and they flashing the gun.
Right,
but
right.
what you need to remember is, you're never going to point at nothing you're not willing to eliminate right now. Anything that you point
right.
a firearm, a gun to, you are going to put a hole in it. You understand? So. When I talk to people, I tell them, hey, listen, a gun should not be your last resort, but it should be very, very well thought out because, you know, does the end justify the means? What does the guy or the
yes.
attacker or
yes.
the situation look like for you to have a gun? You see what I'm saying? So I've been in situations where I had to have one. I never had to use it, but it was
right.
readily available. But I also say, hey, listen, does this call for that? Now, high-stress situations,
yes.
a lot of times people can't think until they get behind the wall and they say, man, I could have handled that differently. Right? So what I'm saying is, you know, and then, you know, with people of color like you and I, it's hard for us to fight with that in court. Right? So,
yes.
so you know, they would come
okay.
up with all these different scenarios that we should have thought of. Now, I do have mace. I make sure my wife has mace. We do, you know, Lyft rides, and we may be doing Uber and things like that. We have to protect
mm-hmm.
ourselves at all costs. But everything may not call for a bullet. Everything, you know, you have – everything is not murder, death, kill. We might just need to eliminate
yeah.
the threat and leave it at that. You know,
you know,
and
one
eliminating
of the things
the threat
that –
Uh-huh.
I said one of the things that I was looking at, I saw that they have these pepper ball guns. And I was telling a friend
yes,
of mine, because she's a nurse, her husband, he's an engineer, and you want to talk about one of the nicest people you meet, and they have no idea what they would do if somebody attacked them. I mean, because that's just not in the realm of their thinking, that these things are going to be happening. And a lot of people feel that way. So, you know, you have to have a different mindset, a different attitude to even fight somebody or even take a punch. You know, there was a young lady, she was attacked, and I just saw this a little while ago, and this is an older incident. You can look it up on YouTube where the young lady was attacked with a man with a gun and
yes.
a skateboard. And she was a cleaning lady. And so she's cleaning, and she's in a business at night, and she was able to get into the door. And once he got inside, he asked her, was she alone? And she said, yes. And then at that time, and then his next words was, and this was a young man, he said, well, I'm going to have sex with you. And then he pulled out his gun. And when he pulled out his gun, the first thing she did was she started swinging at him, and she didn't stop swinging at him. And he's got his gun in his hand, and he's trying to tear her clothes off at the same time. So he's using one hand pointing the gun at her, and the other hand trying to tear her clothes off. Long and short of it, she keeps fighting, and eventually she knocks the gun down, and then she's able to take the gun. He then takes
yes,
off
sir.
And runs. He then runs back because he left his skateboard, and then he runs out. They call the police, and to this day, I don't know if they caught him. But again, even, you know, people tell you not to fight back. I'm not, you know, I'm not in your head. I'm not in anybody's head when you know, somebody tells them something, I'm going to rape you.
Yes.
They tell my son, my daughter that, and I'm not going to say, because I've heard people say this. I've heard people say, just take the rape. We just want you to live. Well, you're hoping that's all they're going to do. But at the same time,
you know what?
I don't know that I can actually tell somebody to take a rape. To them, that might be worse than death, so to speak. So,
you know what?
This lady, she decided to keep fighting. So go ahead.
You know what, Sensei? Let me tell you 2 points. One, mm-hmm. What happens is, like you said, a rape could be worse than death. I tell my wife, I have cousins, female cousins. I have adult sisters. I tell my daughter, because she's a young lady as well, you know.
Oh,
it's,
my goodness. She's so beautiful.
Tell me about it, man. She's 13, and she's not getting any younger.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell you,
yeah.
I tell them, listen, you're gonna fight or you're going to die. Simply because, and I know it sounds harsh, and I know it comes off like that, but let me tell you something.
Yes.
That guy, that attacker, right, that attacker may say, he may comes off as if he's just going to rape you. You don't know that.
Right.
You don't know that. It could be worse.
Right.
You're going to go out fighting. And let me tell you one thing. There are people, and it's evident that the attacker may thought he got away with a rape or something like that until
mm-hmm.
the victim goes to the hospital and they get a body scan and they go up under their fingernails and they find out they done scratched this guy all up and they can trace the guy.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So you can't just lay there. You know, if it was and it's different for every woman. And hey, it happens to
right.
men as well. And I know it could be one of the worst. I have people in my family who went through it. And they're adult women, and it happened when they were younger, and they still have never gotten over that. You know, these are things
right,
that haunt them,
right.
and they spook, and they, you know, and it's, and for them, you know, I have a cousin. She had her jaw broken, dislocated completely, you know, and laid on the alley to die, and he thought he killed her. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
She fought back, and the guy is doing he's out now, but he did 27 behind that. You know, and it's because he had the instinct to fight. When you ask me, does it require training? I cannot say that it requires training. You have to have the will to live and to survive. Because some people fight back and hasn't have any training. But
right,
it is
right.
a major, major plus. It's a major plus that if you have the skills, if you have the will, as long as you got something to live and fight for, and you got the skills,
mm-hmm.
oh, man, I tell you like this. For the most smaller women, I've sparred small women who gave given me a run for my money. Oh, women
right.
that don't look intimidating.
Right.
Guys that don't look intimidating. Me, myself, I don't look intimidating. But the skills that we've been able to acquire over the years has helped me survive, not only in the dojo or in the school, but on the streets, literally.
Well,
you
know,
see what I'm saying?
I happen to be blessed to witness you train and see your wonderful family. You know, you
yes,
got
sir.
Your sons and daughters involved in the martial arts. And so, and I'm
yes,
just
sir.
Wondering, you know, and I've seen you had some other relatives, a female relative that was a little older that came to the school. And so I'm wondering, what do you think when you, I mean, there are a lot of women martial artists, and a lot of the times when women are being attacked, sometimes they're attacked by other women. But when I see some schools, and some people, some schools are pretty specific in who they work with. And so you will have women self-defense, and then they'll be fighting against other women. And, you know, and when we have men, when we have self-defense, like when we have it at Kazi, and we'll focus on some self-defense, it's a mixed group of people. Men against
yes,
women and vice versa, men against men, girls against. I mean, you work it, but it's a mixed group. But some people, you know, they feel that, you know, men would just take advantage of women when they train them, or it really doesn't help a woman that much. It's better if she trains with another woman because she's going to understand her better. And, you know, I mean, is there pluses, minuses in that kind of training? What do you think?
Let me tell you, there is pluses and minuses. I'm not going to say that the guys or the schools who will only do women on women training are completely wrong. And here's why. We have prided on ourselves to be diverse as much as possible. I mean, ethnicity, race, gender, we've prided ourselves on that because danger doesn't look a specific way. It looks like every way. It looks like everything, everybody. Yeah. I mean, danger. Hear me out on this example. I hear these Iraq soldiers, these veterans, talk about how they had to defend themselves against children because children were strapped with bombs. You understand?
Right.
Danger doesn't look a specific way. Danger doesn't look like an adult. Danger could be a child. Danger could be a older lady. I've seen older women attack men for no, you know, people for no reason, and they didn't see it coming. So let me tell you. I have a colleague. She's a good friend of mine. I'll tell you that. She's a good friend of mine. She's a black belt. We fought. We sparred. We've had our differences, ups and downs. But I was training my daughter, and she said, hey, I think you're being a little too harsh on her. Me, myself, I could have been, but I'm trying to prepare her for what the reality is.
Right.
And she said, hey, how about let me come in, you know, once or twice, you know, maybe three times in 1 month and just work with her one-on-one. And you know what? I had to understand that. These schools that do that, maybe they do it because they want another woman who could relate to the situation. But now let me tell you the problem with that. Let me tell you the problem with that since that you just said it.
Okay.
It's not the women who's always going to attack you. You know, it's not the women who's always going to have a problem with you. You know, you could be minding your business completely. You don't have to have a trouble in these streets. But what you will have is people who don't care. Right, they want you for whatever reason. They may be having a bad day, or they want to rob you, or whatever. It could be a woman. But let me tell you something. We all know, and I'm not trying to sound rude, but men are typically bigger, typically stronger.
Right.
And there's no disrespect to the women because you know.
Right.
Yeah, but let me tell you something. My mother, for the first 10 years of my life. My stepfather was extremely abusive, you know, and overpowering. She could handle herself when it comes to a woman. But how many women who don't have the training can honestly say they can handle themselves when it comes to a man? It could be their same height. But when that man comes and he's stronger, we got to prepare our women for those type of things. I want to do, you know, I'm going to move back across the country soon. And when I move back, I want to do a women's self-defense class. But let me tell you something. When I had the women in my class, my mother, my daughter, my wife, I don't take it light because nobody's going to take it light out there.
Exactly.
That man comes up, he wants to choke you. He wants to drag you off into an alley or something like that. These guys, you know, this human trafficking is crazy. They want to snatch up the women and all of that. You have to be able to know what to do and how to protect yourself and get away. It doesn't take a whole lot. You have to know what
it's
technique.
I'm gonna add something into that just from you teaching. And sometimes I sit there and I listen to you teach, and you're yelling at the kids. You're telling them, hey, don't do this. Do it like this. Do it like that. Hit it harder. Do this. Do that. Because if you get into a fight, they're not going to play with you. They're going to hurt you. And then a lot of times, and I remember I was in a class. I went to the King Center, and I was working with Mr. Celine. And she had Celine, and he said there was a girl, one of the girls in the class, and he was working with her on a technique, and she was working against the guy, and she was real gingerly with the technique. And he started yelling at her, and he said, what is my lesson? What is my rule? And she almost started tears. He said, look at me in the face. And he's yelling at her, and in my head, I'm like, lighten up, lighten up. But he said, look, I'm going to train you tougher than any of these guys here, because none of these guys are going to let up on you on the street. They're not going to do that. They're going to come at you harder and more aggressive. So So you have to be more aggressive and tougher than they are. And so he was yelling, he's preparing her for a battle that she has not had yet. And
it's
so
all about how you look,
I look
at it.
At you doing
yes,
that, and I look at you doing the same thing, you know. And so for a minute, sometimes when you yell, I'm like, oh, you're just little kids. But then that yelling, is all of a sudden, you know, we the kids, they're not doing well, and then all of a sudden they see what you're saying, and then all of a sudden they, that switch turns on. They get it now. They really
yes,
get
sir.
It. But they wouldn't have
yes,
got
sir.
It
you know,
if you continued to pamper them.
Yes, sir. You know, you can't. And for a lot of people, they may think that it's harsh, but I'm not here to pat you on your back. I don't want to baby you.
Right.
You know, you don't baby a child when he falls off his tricycle. You stand back and watch him get up and take care of himself. You know,
you
don't run over there to him because it creates a difference. I've been taught you train in here, you will be prepared out there. If you train weak, you will be weak. If you train hard, you'll be hard. You'll be prepared. And awareness is the first of all, let's talk about awareness. Awareness is the first step to protecting yourself. Who's there? Where am I going? Okay, how many people is this? Okay, what does he look like? You know, when you speak about how you, you know, there's some things when I'm training or teaching a child or anybody for that matter, when I'm training anybody and I'm going hard at them, it's because I know they could do better.
Mm-hmm.
Then when they do better, I congratulate them, and that's the difference. You have to
right.
congratulate them, say, I know you can do that. That's what I'm talking about right there. That's what I'm talking about. They do that little half a smirk, right, because they got their congratulations.
Right.
But then they continue to apply that. And that comes from personal experience. See, I have two brothers, and we all are small in stature. When we came into martial arts
right.
together, I just continued, right? And then my younger
right.
brother came back. But when we were out in schools and we were going, you know, we in the urban city, it's not baby for us. It's not baby for us. You know, these we were attacked at different points. We were able to protect ourselves and you know, make it home safe. You know, there's a sensei Andre. I'm not sure if he got promoted
right.
yet.
Andre Muhammad.
But here, exactly. Brilliant guy, very, very tough to deal with, but he's that drill sergeant that
right.
I grew to appreciate, because his whole thing is
mm-hmm.
we want to make it home. You got to go home.
Right, right.
Okay, and we didn't start it, but we're going to have to finish it because we got to go home. And it I tell you, it literally saved my life, these martial arts. And I don't care what martial arts you do. You know, you can do boxing. You can do Muay Thai.
Right.
If you get some type of training, that is a plus, a super plus of protecting yourself and your loved ones. Because it's not just about you. You know, you guys, everybody has
right.
a child, a wife, or I've seen the martial arts of women protect their husbands out in public
mm-hmm.
because it's what they've been trained to do. And I tell you, it's
right.
a brilliant thing, man. It is a brilliant thing. You know what, if I may, I want to switch gears for a second. When you want to talk about this Kyle Rittenhouse thing, man, you know, I will
right.
tell you this. He wasn't strategic. He was slick. Because if you think about it, he wasn't old enough to even carry a firearm. Right?
Right, right.
So that's strike number one. I don't care what type of training he gets, because, listen, children do get training on firearms. I've seen it. But I tell you,
right.
you're not supposed to do that. Okay? First of all, you're not even supposed to be here doing what you're doing. And then that led up to the circumstances in which these people have lost their lives, and you destroyed not just the people in the area, a nation, a nation's hope. Right? There is no good. So what we just heard is the laws don't apply to everybody. Right, we all knew this, but this
right,
is proven
right.
time and time again. They don't apply to everybody. And when you say, you know, he had the gun pointed one way, he had it pointed another way. Let me tell you something. Where I'm from, a gun being present anywhere is a sign of danger.
And
so what happens is everybody's now on high alert. First of all, there's already rioters and looters
mm-hmm.
and things like that, and I'm compassionate to their feelings. But I tell you this. When a firearm, a small firearm, a shotgun, it could be a rifle, whatever, as soon as it is brandished or seen, everything changes. Because now there's a different level of danger. Okay, it only takes 5, maybe 6 for the higher calibers of gun. It only takes 5 or 6 pounds mm-hmm. of pressure to pull that. A child has that. Grown men have 72 pounds of pressure. Okay, grown women carry about 44 pounds of pressure. That's just the flick of a finger. So when that firearm is brandished, now everything changes. He created the circumstances for these people to lose their lives. So then what do you say? What do you say?
Well,
you
know,
can't say, oh. Uh-huh.
Yeah, now that was August 25th, 2020 in Kenosha. Now one of the things that's going on, there was another young man that lost 90% of his right bicep when he got shot by Kyle Rittenhouse. Now, his name was Gage Grossquist. And now what's happened with him, he was a paramedic. And he was trained to go up there to the riot, and he did have a firearm on his person. And he actually had the firearm out, but he did not want to shoot anybody. He knew that there was an active shooter, and they were going after that active shooter that had already killed two people, well, one person at that time, and then the second person being the kid with the skateboard. So when he was going after him, like I said, he got shot in the arm. He had his gun in his other hand. You know, he could have shot, but he didn't engage that way. And so, you know, that was an interesting situation. And one of the things that they're saying, and, you know, like Kyle Rittenhouse got off and was cleared on all counts, and they ruled it self-defense, which most people thought that was going to be. But they're also filing a lawsuit, alleging that the officials and law enforcement was aware and collaborated with armed vigilantes on the night of the shooting. So they knew that there was going to be vigilantes out there. And there were some comments that the police even made, comments that we really appreciate you being out here because you can do some of the things that we'll get in trouble for doing. And so when you're looking out there, they're protected property, supposed to be protected property, and it comes down to a life-death situation, you know. And then you have this 17-year-old that gets engaged like that. Now, I'm going to just say one other thing in regards to that. When he fell down, and you had mentioned earlier about people should have some type of training, well, you could clearly see that he had some type of training by the way he fell down. He didn't fall.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
People were running towards him. He didn't hit his head. You and I both know how to fall down and tuck your chin so that you don't hit your head.
Sir.
And, you know, and he had his gun in position to do something. And and so, you know, the training just makes such a difference. Yeah, I talked about the lady, the 82-year-old Willie Murphy, that fought off an attacker and ended up injuring this young man and putting him in the hospital with injuries. And because she's an avid weightlifter, she works out. Like you said, everybody doesn't have to be a martial artist, but she had a certain level of fitness that allowed her to defend herself. She knew that she could do certain things. She has confidence. And one of the things that I see that you do so much is you build the confidence in the people that you work with because, you know, they're rewarded through how they perform, you know, from applause from everybody. And they know that they've done it right because they got some type of victory, whether they took someone down, evaded something, did a number of different things, punch-kick combinations, and they did it better than they did the first time. And one of the things, what Mr. KG would always say, one of our instructors, he said, when somebody would do something nice and do it, make a perfect kick or a perfect punch, and he says, I want you to remember that because I want you to do it that way every time. Never forget
that. Absolutely.
You know, so,
absolutely.
So I really appreciate a lot of the teaching that we get in the classroom, and, you know, like you're such a big part of that. But we're getting ready to go to our first break, and so we'll be back in a few minutes. And let me just get okay. So after this goes off, we'll be right back. So just hold tight.
Hangs out with his own. White people, cultures different from black people. Puerto Ricans and Indonesians cannot integrate. Egyptians and Germans cannot integrate. Australians and Mexicans cannot integrate. They have different foods. They have different music, different cultures. See, you white and I'm black. If white people have a party tonight and black people have a party, the party will be 100% different. The music. I go to a white restaurant. We integrate today, white. You go to a white restaurant, you got to look all day on the jukebox to find some music.
No. At our party, we'll have Aretha Franklin, Stevie Wonder.
Let me tell you now. If I go play a jukebox in a white restaurant, anybody black or tan here, you got to look all over that box for some black music. Hank Snow, Johnny Cash. All kind of names I ain't never heard of. You know, when that train comes around that mountain, when that train comes, and that truck's driving back. So what I'm saying is, ain't nothing wrong with that music, but that fits the white culture. You go in our joints, oh, baby, don't leave. Oh, I cried all night. Who's that running out of my back door, honey? But see, that was our problem. Then I go to Chinese restaurant, clean, ting, tang, tong, tong, ting. So we can't integrate.
Yeah.
We ain't gonna never have no peace. The culture, the nature's different. I don't hate you. We can eat in your restaurant. We want to marry your women. We got your women now. It ain't nothing we can't do today. But these things the dog got. I see dogs on television eating out of the same plate with white people. I see dogs in the buses, and they do everything with the dogs. So I ain't getting nothing the dog ain't got. So really, ain't nothing in this integration. I need some land. I need some jobs. My people need jobs. We need something so we can build and do for ourselves, and we must have some land. 40 million people. You know, it's a lot of Negroes just in New York and Cleveland, Baltimore, Washington, California. It's a lot of black. Ooh, that's a whole nation. 40 million, man. They don't tell you the truth about that. They want us to stop having babies. They give them birth control. They're paying black women not to have babies.
40 million, not 20 million?
Yeah, they're paying black women not to have babies now. They got all kind of plans to stop our race.
Well, everyone.
So when we know all of this,
getting into birth
so
control,
now a man with my knowledge, what can you tell a man like me now? What's your suggestion? That's your question. Okay, you talking to me, not a dumb Negro or pork chop eater, don't know the truth. I'm free now. I woke up. Now, what are you going to tell me now? I done gave you my solution, some land of my own, doing something for myself like you, England and America, do. Now, I know you're not against the black man. I know you're not against me having my land, are you? English the ruled and slaves forever for a long time. But do you still today don't want me to have my own country and build for myself and govern myself? Would you think that's bad if we thought like that? What's your solution to my problem? 1974, some white man just flew from New York to England in an hour, less than 2 hours. You all are so progressive. You're walking around on other planets. Now, today, I'm intelligent too now. What's your suggestion? What should be my movement? Integrate?
Yeah, equal rights in a mixed society.
In this society, where you still own the government, you still own the train station, the railroad plant, the electric plant, these television cameras, you still make all the food, you control everything, and I'm like a leech on a dog's back. All I can do is just wait for you. I can't do nothing for myself. Integrating it in your society don't mean I'm doing nothing for myself. You doing it all. I want to do something for myself. I'm tired of depending on you. You might get broke one day. Your stores might close. Your gas pumps might cut off again. I'm relying on you now. Can I have my own land and country?
Well, you've got your own freedom here, for instance. I know you're luckier than many black people in America, but you're your own boss.
I'm speaking for my nation. See,
I know, I appreciate that.
If I was representing just me, I wouldn't be talking like this, because I got it made. I'm talking for my brothers.
But I just don't see how, Mohammed. I don't see how you can slice up America into bits and get all the whites in one area and all the blacks in another.
Well, then we leave then. We leave.
But they'd miss you.
I know it.
One last question. At the end of your life, whether it was Allah who was saying it, Elijah Muhammad, or whether it was something that someone wrote about you after you'd gone, what's the thing you would most like people to say about your life? He was a great champion, or what? What would you like people to think about you when you've gone?
I like for them to say, he took a few cups of love. He took one tablespoon of patience, one tablespoon, teaspoon of generosity, one pint of kindness. He took one quart of laughter, one pinch of concern, and then he mixed willingness with happiness. He added lots of faith, and he stirred it up well. Then he spread it over a span of a lifetime, and he served it to each and every deserving person he met.
Muhammad Ali, thank you very much. All right.
Listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com, go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society, and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening. 6 o'clock, Warriors Way Radio, continuing the fight.
Hotel family, we are back from our break. You got to listen to Muhammad Ali, a speech interview he did with an English reporter quite some in the 60s, that was, I believe, 68. And he was talking about integration and the things that we go through and not being ours and not having part of the pie. And then, you know, the last question he asked him, how would you want people to remember you? And, man, did he... I mean, he is such an eloquent speaker and just a man that just inspired so many, and you can just see why, because he just has a pure heart of gold. I have to memorize that. One day when someone asks me to summarize or how would I want to, I'm going to have to use that. I really love that, what he just said, and it was, awesome. Okay, I see a caller on the line, Sister Dee Dee. Are you, any questions or comments? Or are you just listening?
Just listening.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, Mickey TJ. So what do you think? I mean, you heard Muhammad Ali. I played that clip from Muhammad Ali's interview, and he talked about integration, talked about how we're treated differently. And one of the reasons I kind of framed this, what does your self-defense look like? Everybody doesn't get to defend themselves the same way. You know, we walk around with a gun or a knife, and, you know, we get charged up a certain way. You've had many a times where you had a black man walking around with a gun and police ask a question, or maybe not even ask a question and just shoot them. Those things have happened.
Absolutely.
We had that happen to a 12-year-old kid with a play gun on the playground where the officer didn't even get out of the car. And this kid was playing on playground with other people. So there was no threat, but the officer was even cleared of that, and he never got out of the car. And during that time, you know, because I was in law enforcement, and so I understand the use of force because, I'm a training officer as well. I got certified by the state to train people in defense and arrest tactics. So I know what they teach and so forth. But I also understand there's a difference how some people are treated, and a lot of that is based on who they are. They, you know, if you're a black man versus a white man in a situation, is treated differently. And we see that over and over again. So when you talk about self-defense and people walking around with guns, you know, it's scary. You know, we feel that we can protect ourselves with a gun. And one of the things that they don't talk about is you have over 70% of the people with guns get them taken away from them. They don't talk about that. And so then again, we talk about the skill set. And so we talk in martial arts that, you know, your hand, you know, the gun is an extension of your hand, wherever they might be. Because if that gun is laying on the ground, it's just no way it's going to fire unless somebody picks it up and pulls the trigger. You have
it's just
to do something. That spear on the ground is not going to stab you unless a physical body, a human being, picks it up and tries to use it against you. And we've had situations where we've been involved, whether it be a gun. I know myself where I've been in situations where people have had guns, people have had knives, and I've been able to disarm people, and I've been in a situation where I hadn't used deadly force in a situation. Those things have happened to me. Now, you had a situation, and one of the things that I want to talk about, you were able to stay calm, and that's part of the training that you get, and that teaches you a different level of confidence. So when I talked about the 82-year-old weightlifting champion that got into that situation where the young man had broke in her house, the Willie Murphy female, she had confidence because she understood what she could do because she trained, and that's what she does. You have training, and then you teach your family. Everybody in your family. I love seeing it. You know, it's just wonderful to see you passing that torch down in that learning environment and so forth. And so, but again, your thoughts on, you know, the training and preparing people, getting ready for situations. I mean, we talked a little bit about it. We talked about, you know, the girls being trained by other girls or versus being trained by guys. You know, all those situations. I mean, it's just a combination of things that can happen. You know, do you carry a knife? Do you carry a gun? And, you know, like one of the things that I tell people, I teach people how to fight with newspaper or different objects that don't serve dual purposes. Like if you have a gun and I take it away from you, well, then I can use it against you. You have a knife, I take it away from you, I can use it against you. So that's what I mean when I say dual purpose. And so in your case, you know, you're saying that you're 5'4". I didn't know you were that's you. I thought you were a little taller. And you know what?
Hold on now. Everybody know I'm 6'1", okay? We're just going to go with that. We're gonna keep it right there.
Okay.
Everybody
all right.
knows.
All right.
You know. All right. I want to touch on, just real quick. Dude, Muhammad Ali was a brilliant guy, man. You know what I mean? Like, that was, dude was just brilliant all the way around. Like you said, really well-spoken and professional, but took no crap. You know what I mean? Like, the dude, I mean, it makes me smile when I hear him talk. You know what I mean? From the things that he's been able to accomplish. So he's just a real, real, real intelligent guy. I tell you, though, whenever you're ready to speak about integration, we're going to get real deep into that. Because I think I have a point of view that a lot of people don't have. And I don't like to rub people the wrong way, but I like to tell my truth as I see it. And...
No,
I tell you, But when it comes to self-defense, man, I tell you this. I started this past spring, I was working on a family dynamic where I had all my cousins and my aunts, my sisters, and I was building a dojo. And we were outside, of course. You know, there were a lot of regulations regarding COVID,
right.
So we were outside. But one day I just stood there, and nobody moved. Everybody was statuesque. And I realized, dude, you're building an army. You're building an army. And I tell you, I pride myself in that. I pride myself on building an army, people who are not to be tested, but they will be tested. And what happens when you are tested? You know what I mean?
Right.
When that guy breaks into that lady's house and she's trained, she has the skills to, you know, move this way, move that way. You know, I know what
right,
to do and
right.
how to react, you know. And I tell you, when you talk about the confidence, she had the confidence to protect herself
right.
and make sure that she is alive. I tell you this, I've had bullies in my day, and I know that I know a lot of people see it differently. But these mm-hmm. kids who go to the schools and react in such a way that they end lives, I was there.
Yeah.
I didn't have the confidence or the protection or the school backing to protect me from everyday abuse.
Right.
But when I was in the dojo, when the martial arts kicked in, and I get hit in the face, but I'm able to learn from that and go forward. Oh, I'm prepared. Oh,
right.
My confidence is coming. Oh yeah. Now I never went looking for any problems, but I was damn sure prepared. To this day,
right.
To this day, my skill set could always be sharpened every single day. You know, there's never a thing I cannot learn. But until I get more and more training, oh, I'm trained. I am trained, and I am trying to train out. And you asked the question, do I think people should be trained to protect themselves or in any type of martial art? Absolutely. I absolutely. I think everybody should be. But my conundrum is with the Kyle Rittenhouse situation, because it's like, what do you get trained upon? What do you get trained upon, and how does it affect us? Black versus white, we do not have the same laws. Let's just say what it is.
Right.
We do not have the same laws. We do not
exactly.
have the same. Listen, let me tell you something. I had a cap gun one time. Remember the cap guns with the little the
mm-hmm.
red?
The cap gun.
My cap gun was all orange, and it had a green trigger. Okay, I think it was 13. It had a green trigger. Oh, it set the police off. They pulled the guns out. And I'm like, what? Like, wait, what's going on? They thought I had a real gun. Man, it was a highlight orange. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
But then you tell me that another minor can go, and he say he want to protect his community, right?
Right.
But, and I say air quotes with that. He's trained, but if we had the same training, I mean, do we get the same justice? We have to be trained differently.
Right.
Let's just say what it is. We have to be trained differently because we don't get the same backing. We don't get the same.
Right.
We don't have a Johnny Cochran. We don't have a Johnny Cochran to say, hey, mm-hmm. hey. No. And here's another thing. Okay. So Mr. Kyle Rittenhouse, he comes up from Illinois, he does what he does. He destroys these people's lives, right? Okay, cool. Now, let's just say somebody else there was some training. Say myself, say you, say another 16-year-old black kid. But he has training as well. And he see, oh, there's an active shooter, open fires. Does he get the same justice? Our training has to be different because we know that's not right.
I don't think he would have been able to walk past the police officers. Not in that
you case, understand?
Not a black kid with a gun. We
you
wouldn't
understand
be talking
what I'm saying?
About it. We'd be, you know, his family member and other people would be talking about him. And so we, you know, and that's the sad thing. And so that's why I said, what does your self-defense look like? Are you thinking about these other factors, which you pointed out? You know, the justice system doesn't work for us in a lot of self-defense situations. I remember in California, there was a black male, and he was in line to be a police officer. His father was a former army veteran, and he was at a nightclub where some shooting started. I might have the city wrong, but he was at a nightclub, And he pulled out his gun, and he made the shooter leave. And he told people to, you know, he was directing people where to hide, so forth and this and that. Police officer responded to the place. They showed up, and when the police officer showed up, he never even said a word to the kid, walked up to this kid that was the bouncer in the club and shot and killed him in the back of the head. Shot him in the back of the head. And, you know, and this kid was in line to be. And so, you know, you hear this from the NRA, and they never said anything about that. That was not in the paper where the NRA said a comment about, you know, they always talked about these active shooting situations, and they would talk about, you know, the good thing is having a good guy with a gun. But that good guy can't be a black guy with a gun. You know, and so many times we've been in those situations where people feel they're justified. I got my CCW. You had the, what's the guy out of Minnesota that was in the car? With his daughter and girlfriend. The name is escaping me. I think Castile, Philando Castile. I think he was in the car, and his girlfriend was saying he has a permit. He does have his gun, but he has a permit. We'll get that out, and you know, and then the officer reaches in the car and starts shooting. There's a child in the car. He starts shooting. So when we talk about our self-defense, you know, we have to explain ourselves different. We have to do so many things different. And this young man was killed. And because the officer said he was a threat, because he had a gun, he was justifiably, had the gun on his person. You know, and in so many situations where people have been killed because they thought they had a gun, not that they saw a gun, they thought they had a gun. You know, Terrence Pritchard was pulled over, walking to his car, and didn't have a gun or anything. And three other officers, when the female officer told him to put his hand up, she ran past the other officers and shot and killed him. Said that she felt that he was a threat to the officers. You know, and so, I think that was in Ohio. And so these incidents that happen, you know, like a lot of people, they talk about getting guns.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I want to do, and I noticed, I mean, we talk so much about it that, you know, we teach disarmament. And most of the incidents when you have people with guns that they – most people don't walk around with the guns in their hands. They have to dig in their hands. And most shooting incidents with people are within 3 to 10 feet. Within 3 to 10 feet. Now, we have this thing called the 21-foot rule in law enforcement. And so you're talking about a trained officer. And the average person can get to an officer if he's inside 21 feet. You know, he can get to that officer 80% of the time, 80-plus percent of the time before he gets off one shot. Before he gets off a shot. But if he's beyond 21 feet, so he's at 22, 23 feet, the officer more than likely will probably get two shots off.
Right.
We're talking our average incidents are within 3 to 10 feet. So I tell people, your first action needs to be your personal skill set.
Absolutely.
And we've had those situations happen. Go ahead.
Your training in whatever you do, right? Your training will prepare you for situations, but more so, it will prepare you to think, to be able to think. A lot of people can't think. A lot of people don't think. And the training would allow you to think before you react. See, I tell my children, I say, you know, I don't hide my see, I look at it like this. When you hide a gun from a kid and they find it, then they get curious and things happen.
Right.
My kids are well aware. I have four children. They are well aware, but my firearm is well protected and well put away. But it's accessible when if I ever need it. But let me tell you something. I tell them all the time, my gun isn't a weapon. It's a shield. It's only for protection. See, a lot of people don't think about it being protected. A lot of people just want to go and go and go. So let me tell you, when you ask what my self-defense looks like in regards to this, it's very hard to say because everything does not apply to us. See, I carry my firearm, but I'm also a black belt.
Right.
But if I'm in a situation and there's a guy who's too far away from me to defend myself from because, you know, he may have a firearm, but he's not in arm's reach. But that bullet comes out of that chamber, then we got a different situation. So let's say I pull and I fire to protect myself. Then you know what they would say? Oh, you were a black belt. Oh, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? Not really understanding the variables, the situation. So it's hard for me to say. I tell people you have to be aware. Man, being aware is will give you the biggest leg up. Let me ask you this, though, because this situation here always bothered me. Okay, there was a woman named Marissa Alexander. In 2014, she was getting a separation, a divorce from her husband. But he had threatened to rape her. He had raped her before. He had beaten her several times, which is the reason for the separation and the divorce. Okay, they were going back and forth. He was sending text messages, which he has the proof for. All right. She went and had her a firearm. Mind you, Florida is a stand your ground state. So he pulled up. She comes outside. She fires a warning shot in the air. Okay, warning shot.
Yes, that's right. I remember the incident.
See what I'm saying? And she spent over 6 years. It happened in 2012, but she spent over six years locked up and then on a ankle monitor.
And I think they gave her 20-something years. They gave her 20-something years, and when they let her out early, you had some advocate groups that was fighting for her.
Right.
Yeah.
But see, so you ask me, you say, okay, Sensei TJ, what would you tell her to do? I have no idea. I have to be honest. Because it's like, what did you do? You know, but one thing I would have maybe said, you know, baby, you got to go get yourself some self-defense classes. You got to be able to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But who knows the level or the timing she would have been able to do that? All she know is to protect herself, and she hit a warning shot. It's a warning shot. My self-defense, I tell you, it's kind of hard for me to cover that because I would have done the same thing. I'm gonna be honest. If I was in her position and I didn't have the training, I would need this guy to get away from me. And he see that firearm and he hear that shot go off in the air. It didn't aim at anybody. He didn't hit an innocent bystander. Right. She didn't even point it at him. So I'm telling you, rationally thinking, I would have done the same thing.
It comes down to knowing the law, because anytime you shoot a gun, you're using deadly force, whether you shoot it up in the air or not.
Absolutely.
Because if you shoot it up in the air, that bullet is coming down somewhere.
Yes.
Now, where it hits, no one knows.
But then you talk about
down.
Yeah, but then you talk about stand your ground. So technically, if a guy who has already violated you in so many ways, and you know that his threats are promises because he's done this before.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So what do you do? Now, did you kill him and then do you get off? Or did you say, hey, get away from me, pow, pow, right? And then it was only one warning shot. So did you kill him and hope that you get off? Or did you shoot a warning shot in the air and say, hey, get away from me? They have police reports that this guy has already done these things. She has text messages. He's always done these things. They revoked her stand your ground. So to be honest, it's like the law does not apply to us. So we have to, I'm telling you, what a martial arts training come in at people. If you're listening, this is where it comes in at. Because if a guy, I teach my daughter, I mounted her, I put my hands on her shoulders, I put my hands around her neck, I put my hands around my wife's
I've
neck.
Yes, I've seen it. I've seen the video.
Oh, yeah. I teach them.
Yeah,
I say, hey, a guy grabs you by the arm. He grabs your hair. He grabs you around your neck. You know, you need to act fast. And how do you act fast? Already being aware there may be a danger here.
Right.
Who is that?
Right.
Who is that? Oh, is he aggressive? Right? How do I turn my neck? How do I move fast? How long do I have until I pass out? People, these are all the things that you would get in your martial arts training. They said you got 8 seconds until you lose consciousness. I tell you, you got six.
Right.
You got cushion room. You need to be able to move and react
right.
fast. Protect yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, if you're listening, go get yourself some martial arts training, and it is not expensive. People will give you their life lessons
for
inexpensive. I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if you saw this video, and in the video, and it was circulating on YouTube and Facebook for quite some time. It's at least 4 years old, I think. But it's this black girl named Keisha. That's how they frame it, her name being Keisha, whether they're making some joke, whatever. But her name is Keisha, and she looked like she's in her 20s. And she went to this martial arts school. And she wanted to learn self-defense. And how they frame it is, she goes in there, there's an instructor, and he's wearing the helmet and the body protecting, the leg, the groin, all of that. And she's got this gear on. And at some point, she... the girl explains to her, I want you to, and this is the instructor explains to her, I want you to fight back, do whatever you can to keep him off, get him off of me. And so he goes to attack her. And actually it's two people attacking her. And she beats the crap out of both of these guys. She whereas the instructor has to tell her to stop. And the way they framed the video is that the hood came out in her. And so you do, you know, despite everything that we learned in martial arts, because it does give us a clear advantage. Because when you think about somebody like Mike Tyson, the thug, that was getting in the fight, beating people up, when he was 12 years old, they used to wage bets against him and other people to fight when he was street fighting. But Mike Tyson, the boxer, Mike Tyson, the street fighter, wouldn't have a chance against Mike Tyson, the boxer, because that's a different skill set, and we know that and we understand that. But again, but surprise makes fools out of anybody. So if you don't, if you get surprised by a technique, something somebody does, you know, you think they're going to do this and they do something else or whatever. There's so many different variables and stuff like that. So that awareness, that key, but this is why we train. One of the things that my instructor has always told me, that 100 times you start to learn it. 1,000 times you get pretty good. 5,000 times you own it. And I say, what technique have you done 5,000 times? And most people, they can't say they've done 5,000 kicks, this, that, whatever, but we can say that.
Yes.
And so we don't have to think about doing what we need to do when those circumstances happen. I hear so many people tell me, well, when I was in the Army, I used to do this. Well, that was 30 years ago. I used to do karate. That was umpteen years ago. Well, I grew up. You don't grow out of those things. You know, me and you, we talk about this is the way we live. It's a way of life.
It ain't just a way of life.
It is taking care of your body. It is having that awareness. It is looking to advance yourself any way, shape, or form, and to grow and to build that communication with you, your community, your family. That's what it's all about. Fighting is just something that happens when you have to protect yourself. But outside of that, we're eating healthy. We're living healthy. We're doing healthy things. We're making healthy movements.
Yes, sir.
We're taking care of ourselves. We're doing all these different things. It's so... You know, when we talk about being that warrior, what is a warrior? A warrior is one that protects and provides. And so, you know, and so I'm providing all these other things. And one of the things that, you know, you talk about the Black Wall Streets that we've had and so many other places, but we weren't able to protect them. And so when you look at everything that's going on, like I had a talk with Doc Rogers and I was wondering about, you know, the troubles that we're having, like in Africa, you know, you got China, Japan, Britain, all these places are in Africa taking all the riches out of Africa. And I'm like, oh, why can't they stop it? Well, they don't have the nuclear power. And, you know, and so you can't protect your own backyard.
Yes, sir.
And so right now we're living, you know, on somebody else's land, you know, and they have the nuclear power. You know, if they want to get rid of certain people here or there, they can do that, but they're not messing with Japan because they have a nuclear power. You know, so in the U.S., you know, they got issues with Japan. They got issues with Korea because they got the power to continue to live and not be bullied.
Yeah.
And so, and this is what we're talking about. You know, there's so many aspects to people being bullied and not being bullied and how we fight and what that picture looks like. You know, and I, you know, I just thank you for just so many things that you do. And I look at your family and, you know, so many times if I grab your son, he knows what to do. I grab your daughter, she knows what to do. You know, and they have to do things, and they learn how to do things a little different dealing with different people. I'm a little bigger, you know, and so, you know, but they're learning. And I that's just so wonderful to be part of that learning experience. I look forward to you coming back here so we can get together and do some more stuff.
I will be back. I will be back. I tell you that. And I do have to run, but I tell you this, if I can leave anybody – who is listening, and I hope the world is listening. If I can leave you guys with anything, and I don't care who you are, go get yourself some survival, because all this is about survival, all of this.
Right. Okay.
You know, like you saying, there's so many different variables and situations, but training will help you be prepared for those situations. You know. It is a way of life. It is a way of life, and I carry myself with that training all day long, all day long. And believe me, you have a good time. You have a good time learning. You have a good time learning. You realize your body. You realize your body can do things. Your body can do things that you didn't even know was a weapon. A lot of people don't even understand their wrist. Their wrist, where they watch it, is a weapon. so I tell you, listen, if you guys. Everybody who's listening, go get yourself some training. And I'm pretty sure myself and Sensei Craft will be more than happy to explain things to you, show you where you will point you in the right direction. No matter where you are in the country or in the world, you can go get yourself some training. You can be prepared for danger. But as long as you remember, you are not the attacker. You are the person who is surviving and wants to live and go home to their family. That's all that this is about.
Right.
That's all it's about. Well, I appreciate you having me, and you definitely got me back, man. You definitely got me back.
Oh yeah,
no,
we'll definitely do this again.
Absolutely.
Well, one of the things I plan on doing is the first Thursday of the month, which is where we're at right now. I always plan on having different martial artists in and just talk about how they train and how they're teaching their people. I mean, are some martial arts schools, are they preparing their people with guns? Because a lot of people, I know a lot of martial arts do carry guns, but and that's just an added part of the weaponry because, you know, it's different from back in the day. Yeah. I mean, you know, just like some people still have bow and arrows. They go hunting.
Yeah.
They have mini bows or slingshots. I mean, there's so many different things, whether it be poisons, it's just a lot out there, you know.
Yes.
So, but anyway, I will shut up, let you rock and roll. Sensei TJ, thank you for being on, and we look forward to having you again. Say hello to your wonderful family, and can't wait to see you guys when you get back here.
All right, no problem. Y'all be good.
All right, take care. All right, family, we had Sensei TJ, and I think he's a fourth degree black belt, and he's originally out of the Milwaukee area, and we were teaching together over at Kosciuszko, and he's a higher ranking than me. I've just a black belt. I haven't tested for any further advancement, and I've been a black belt for probably about three and a half years, but my training and fighting goes long before I ever got a black belt. I won some world championship fighting all over the world. I was fighting the K-1 circuit. I was fighting Muay Thai. And I fought some of the best people in the world, lost to some, and beat a lot. And so I was very fortunate. And so that got me into studying martial arts. I did some boxing, did the judo, Muay Thai, Eskrima, pretty much every martial arts on the planet. I've been able to work with some of the best people in the world and learn these things. So I know that it's helped. I've been in situations where I've been able to help other people save themselves. I had a situation where I had one of my students. He happened to be a DJ at a nightclub. And this happened maybe about 4 years ago. And in the nightclub, a man walks in the club with an AR-15 and a .357 on his hip. The two bouncers run to the door, and they try to take the AR-15 from him and tell him, hey, he's got to get out of here. And while they're struggling with this guy, people are running out the club. The police are aware that this guy is in there with a gun, but they're not running and sprinting in there because the police have to look. They want, one, they want to protect themselves. They don't want to walk in somewhere and just get shot. So they have to make sure they got the right information. So I always tell people that it is up to you to do what you need to do to save yourselves in these situations that occur. And hopefully, you know enough to do something, or you're capable, or you're able. And if you're one of those people that physically can't do something in regards to protecting yourself by physically doing something to somebody, hopefully you have access to a phone where you can at least call for help, give some information, because everybody can do something, whether you write down a description of the person, what they were wearing, this, that, a number of different things. There's always going to be something that somebody can do. Other people that can be a little more active, and one of the things, when they do training for active shooter training, and most schools have that because the United States leads in active shooters. As a matter of fact, I mean, far more. It's, in a lot of countries, it's very rare that something like that happens. But the United States is number one and has been number one for years in regards to active shooters. And generally, 87% of them are white males. And so I'm going to take that a step further when we talk about active shooter training. You know, we just had this incident in Michigan where this young kid gets a gun and he shoots people, and the gun was purchased by his dad. And his dad had the gun in the house for like 4 days before this kid walks out of the house with the gun and goes to school and shoot people. And then they saw some information from their investigation after the incident that he had planned to kill people. There was information on his phone and also stuff on his computer. And so, and they had also red flagged this kid. And so there are situations where, you know, how people handle these situations, you know, in the accessibility that people have to firearms and situations. They say that this kid might have been bullied. And if you know something, you know, I did a show a while back, if you know something, say something. And there's generally somebody that always knows that somebody is feeling a certain kind of way, and they're looking to do something. And some people want to see it happen. Some people don't believe it's going to happen, so they don't say anything, and, oh, he's just pissed off. He really doesn't mean it. But I think that we're at a day and age and time where we don't need to guess on how somebody really feels, what they may or may not do. Let somebody know, the proper people, so that certain things can be looked at a certain way, and we may be able to cut down on some of these incidents, especially if we get that information out there and share it with these people. In some of these situations, when I'm going to finish with a friend of mine, we did some training at my house. He's one of my students, and like I said, he was a DJ at the club. The two bouncers are fighting with the guy to try to take the AR-15. The Franklin Police Department, they're outside of the club. And so the police, they want to get as much intelligence as they can. And they're not real trusting about the information because they don't trust that people are going to give accurate information a lot of times. That's just how they are. They're not that trusting when it comes down to the general public. But so you had that situation going on. And so as that goes on, they're fighting, trying to get this AR-15 from them. And now the guy's going for the 357. Now, my friend that we did trainings with, and he was one of my fighters, and we did gun retention training and gun defense. So I'm teaching him how, if he has a gun, how to keep somebody from taking his gun, and then how to defend himself if somebody has a gun. And so long and short of it, he went to grab the gun. They called him over there. He ran over there, and he turned the guy's wrist as the guy was going for the gun and turned the gun on him. So some people will say point the gun downwards so it goes to the ground or up in the air. Well, I say, and I tell people the quickest, the best place is to point it at his body. And so he's got the gun pointed at his body. The first thought in this guy's head is not to shoot himself. But so if the gun does go off, that's who it's going to hit. And so, and that's where the gun was. But what Marcus happened to do, everything that was taught, and he ended up breaking the guy's hand, because if you're holding the gun and you got the gun grip where you're ready to shoot, if you're holding on to it and somebody grabs you and your finger's in that guard, inside of that guard, more than likely your hand is going to get broke. There's a more than 80% to 90% chance that that hand is going to get broke. We work and teach these techniques all the time, and that's basically what happens. So he got a citizen's award from the police department and the club, you know, gave their thanks in a number of different ways. But again, he learned something. He's a trained practitioner. And so one of the things that people need to understand is not how many times something happens. It's about when it does happen that you're able to survive. I can go on with my daughter. She was in a situation where she was at work and a guy attacked her. And he charged at her and she kicked him in the rib. And he went down and he remained on the ground until the police got there. Now, I was mad at her because there were people there on her job, but they didn't come outside to help deal with this situation. So I would say that she made a bad decision in going outside to talk to this person because, you know, that's probably what encouraged this person to attack her because she was by herself. But if some of her coworkers would have stepped outside with her, then this probably wouldn't have happened. That's just my thinking behind that. So when we talk about awareness and learning different things, your self-defense, personal safety, and I don't like to always say self-defense. I frame it that way because a lot of people are comfortable with the word self-defense, but a lot of times self-defense means you're defending yourself after somebody did something to you. And a lot of times I say you're just going to do your personal safety thing, because if you're waiting for somebody to do something and thinking that you're going to have the opportunity to respond back to them in a timely manner, that might not be the case. So a lot of times, I'll put it this way, if I hit you first, you won't get a second hit. You won't get a second chance. And so sometimes you have to be first. Now, is that still self-defense? Sure it is. If somebody makes a threat to attack you in some way, shape, or form, you have the right to defend yourself. Whether they tell you they're going to hurt you, where they aggressively move a certain way, coming at you with a weapon or charging at you with their person. And so a lot of people don't understand what self-defense looks like. So there was a lesson taught in the self-defense thing with the Kyle Rittenhouse thing when he talked about he had the right to defend himself, and he used self-defense, which is a hard something to arrest somebody for in that situation where you can clearly see that he was being attacked and he was being threatened, but at the same time, he had initiated some of the incident that happened in which people deemed him as the active shooter and he needed to be stopped. Now, in defense, and I'm not saying in defense of Kyle Rittenhouse, but and not in defense of anybody, so to speak, but if these people were trained, there was an opportunity where they could have grabbed the gun. The gun was on the ground momentarily, and they went to hit him versus somebody grabbing the gun. We see that in football all the time, where people, they want to score the touchdown. So they, instead of falling on the ball so that they can get a chance to get the recovery and quarterback makes the play and sets something up, they try to pick the ball up and run with it, but they get knocked out of the way. You know, versus they had that moment. That moment just, it goes just like that. And so you had that situation where these guys had that moment where they could have did something, but they weren't trained. You had the one guy that was a medic. He had his arm. They said he lost 90% of his right bicep when he got shot. So he wasn't going to be one of those people that went for that gun. And the young man that did with the skateboard, he was shot. And he did strike at Rittenhouse with the skateboard. But again, he did it for the reason that this guy is the active shooter, and they're trying to stop the active shooter. There was another, it was a black male. I don't have his name. I did write it down a while back. But he also kicked Rittenhouse when he was on the ground. He kicked at him. But again, instead of kicking him to the head, he should have grabbed the weapon. But at the same time, he might have been thinking a little different. I'm a black guy, and if I grab this weapon, I know the police out here, they're going to shoot me. And so, again, we're back to what does self-defense look like for you? Do you risk the chance of being killed, even though you legally have a gun, or you're trying to disarm a person that has killed someone? And that was the situation that went on in Kenosha, Wisconsin, on August 25th. And so we already know that his self-defense, he got off on that. But again, it's something that we need to look at. There's been numerous other situations where people have been able to survive not using guns when other people have had guns. So there are ways. I do have a caller on the line. Let me see who that is. We got questions or comments. I have a caller on the line at 4600. Questions or comments, or are you just listening?
Well, I'm just going to make a comment.
Okay.
And Kyle Rittenhouse is a hero in my eyes. What he done was correct.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, there in the St. Louis area, you got black women that's buying weapons, which I approve of. At these gun
mm-hmm.
shows, as if they standing
right.
around to get into the venue, as if they're going to a concert, and that's what's more needed. They need to arm themselves because they are usually, too often,
mm-hmm.
the direction of attack is usually portrayed upon them. So, I think that's a good thing. That they and see, you was born with the right to self-defense before there was government. In the animal world,
mm-hmm.
insects, fowl, they always have they born with the right to self-defense. And the same thing, and it depends on the type, the mode of the civilization that you presently live, there's different ways to go about doing it. So that's my opinion on that.
Well, yeah. Okay. Well, I thank you for your comments. You know, do you have any comments on other than outside of people having a gun defending themselves? You know, if they learn a skill, a martial arts, boxing. You know, we talked about, I don't know if you heard it later, earlier, but there was an 82-year-old female. Her name was Willie Murphy, and she was attacked, and she was an avid weightlifter, so she could handle herself. She knew that she had confidence about her ability. A guy was at her door, asked her to call 911, said he got shot. She went to her phone, and while she was at her phone, he kicked the door in, and now he's in her house. She breaks the leg off of a table, and she beats him. And 911 gets, the police finally get there. They capture him, but he's on the ground. He's basically unconscious, and they have to take him to the hospital. Now, this was done by an 82-year-old lady with someone that had broken her house and attacked her. But, you know, like I said, she had the confidence because she knows what she's able to do because she trains a certain way. And so, you know, there's options, you know, based on certain circumstances. And so we just kind of want to put that out there because we're trying to get people to, you know, put these guns down, and that guns aren't necessarily the first line of defense, but it's something that we're so accustomed to. But so I want to say we're about to close out.
Good for that lady, that's more the exception than the rule. But good for her. Thank you very much for the opportunity, sir.
Not a problem. Thank you. Okay, people. Again, thank you for joining us on Warriors Way, continuing the fight. We will be back next Thursday with another program. We hope you enjoy. And so in closing out, I want to just thank my guest, Sensei Terrence Thompson and Sister Dee Dee Conley for calling in. And you, my listening audience, for just chiming in and listening to this conversation. I hope we provided some information and some thoughts and concerns for you in regards to your own personal safety and what you can do to help yourself and your family. Okay, thank you. What's up, family?
When the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory, glory.
Oh,
the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, the spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, Lord.
Every man, man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the League of Justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. No one can win the war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory. The coming of the Lord, my eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes.